Welcome to the Princeton Laxcast. Jerry Price, I'm joined by Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Matalon. And coach, welcome.
Glad to be back here.
So obviously you'd much rather be preparing for an NCAA tournament game, and I think that the goal of the program every year is to reach the NCAA tournament. This year's team did not accomplish that goal and also did not reach the Ivy League tournament, but this year's team is in a relatively strange place compared to a lot of teams in that it heads into the offseason with a lot of momentum and a five-game winning streak. And most teams aren't going to do that. Somebody's going to win the national championship and might not even have a five-game winning streak given how many teams lost their league championship game. Princeton winning five straight to get to the end of the year and having momentum. So how much does that carry over into an off season and into the beginning of next year?
You know, I mean, as thrilled as we are with the five-game win streak, and look, backs against the wall, 3-5, you know, we can tip our hat to the senior class for getting our guys focused and going on a five-game run. But, in terms of how we look at going into the offseason, it more leans towards hunger. I think that, you know, to be at a place like Princeton, and to be able to honor the teams of the past, but also take care of business here. You know, it's unacceptable with how we kind of finished up and, you know, just as a whole. So, you know, we're hungry. We're looking forward to it. I think our guys want more out of their experience here, and I think they're going to work very hard for that.
But 3-5 could have gone either way. And to turn around and then win the last five, none of them closer than five goals, huge win over Cornell to end the season, sort of, you know, we were at the team dinner after the Cornell game, and it was a sort of strange situation in that it was a team that was playing so well, and yet the season just ended so abruptly, and I don't think anybody really knew what to make out of it at the time, because they were also thrilled to having beaten Cornell, and they were also thrilled about having the five-game winning streak, but they all wanted to just keep playing so much. But still, to be playing that well at this time of year and with so many young players, I think that's a pretty good sign.
It really is. I mean, look, the young guys, they did an outstanding job this year, stepping into big-time roles and capitalizing on their opportunity and producing as well. And, you know, you mentioned it at 3-5, and I'll say it again. I'll tip our hat to our senior class. I mean, that's a group that shouldered that responsibility to kind of flip the script and get us back to playing a heck of a lot better of lacrosse. And they did that. You know, I think that, you know, the unfortunate part is to leave your fate in somebody else's hand at the end of the season. It's just a place. It's a really tough place to be. And I think that it's a lesson learned for our young guys and our older guys did a really nice job of making that point and that presence felt of, hey, you got to take care of business week in and week out. You got to take care of business in the off season and the preseason, you know, throughout the summer to win those league games, to set yourself up to a position to play for an Ivy championship and then hopefully a shot at the NCAA tournament and an NCAA championship. So, very, very pleased with how it did end up. You know, I realize I came off a little negative to start this, but, look, I'm happy with the production of the young guys. I'm happy with the leadership of the older guys. It ended up in the right spot, and I hope that our guys can realize that and then push forward.
Well, I think that your first comments show where the program is. You want to be playing this time of year. You don't want to be watching and thinking about what next year might bring. You want to still be practicing and still be playing. You go back to the numbers of it all. Princeton 3-3 in the league, tied for third. Everybody thinks Princeton was fifth. Well, no, Princeton tied for third with Brown and Penn, just lost to both of them. That was the tiebreaker. That's why those two got into the Ivy tournament. But if you go back, this is the ninth Ivy tournament. It was only the second time a team won three games in the league and didn't reach the Ivy tournament. If you go back to 25 years before that, only three times had a team with three wins would have not gotten into an Ivy tournament had there been one. So it's a very rare thing statistically to be 3-3 in the league and not get into the Ivy League tournament. Did you watch any of the tournament, or is it easy for you to, or is it hard for you to watch when you know you want to be playing, or did you just want to
see? It's difficult. It's difficult every year to watch. You know, this is, you know, every year when we start out, you know, first team meeting, I mean, the dream's to play deep into May, and you've got to handle your business that far. So, yeah, I mean, we went out, we did a little recruiting. I missed, on Friday evening, I was watching one of our young guys in Long Island, which was a treat to watch him. And then, I caught the You know, it's funny. I was actually talking to Peter Cordry as he was heading up to Columbia, and we were just recapping the first game. And then, you know, I got home in time to grab a bite to eat and watch the second game. And, you know, I watched it with no sound, just trying to enjoy a little bit of lacrosse. But, you know, it ended up, you know, very surprising semifinal games. Good lacrosse from a handful of teams.
All right. So am I wrong in saying that what Princeton did on Jeff Teat and what Brown did on Jeff Teat are two completely different things?
Yeah, very different. I mean, look, Brown, you know, Mike Daly and his staff had his team prepared, and they ran a face guard shutoff with a five-man zone behind it at times, and very different. I mean, Princeton, we denied Teat the ball with George Baum, but at times he did have it, and then, you know, we covered him in a very physical nature. You know, at times it did look like we were shutting him off, but George Bond did end up sliding off to him on occasion. Different game plan, similar mindset, hope for the similar outcome, but different approaches.
So a lot of the so I wrote about when the last time or what that performance, Bond's performance, reminded me of, and we talked about this in the last time we did. Well, actually, we haven't talked about this because you and I have talked about this ourselves. We haven't talked about it on a podcast, but what did it remind me of? And it reminded me of the game that Damian Davis had against Mikey Powell in the Carrier Dome in the 2003 regular season, where he shut him out, no goals, no assists, and he had a goal of his own. A lot of alums emailed about the game that Christian Cook had against Casey Powell in the 98 semifinals, and in that game, Casey Powell had no goals. He did have two assists, but Christian Cook basically wiped him out, and Cook had a goal of his own, and you know, that's another great
individual performance. Both those performances are outstanding. I mean, I think that it's funny. We had Dave Morrow out earlier in the year, and he kind of sent a message just about his defensive mentality, just about, you know, the fierceness, the competitiveness, the aggressiveness, but then the personal approach of not getting beat one-on-one and really shutting down matchups. And it's funny, you know, George wearing number 17 and having a little of that anger in his game.
That's, you know, who he reminds me of.
We hope that he can finish like Dave had finished.
Well, obviously, yes. I mean, David Morrow is probably one of the two greatest defensive players in the history of college lacrosse.
And our fingers are crossed there.
He's the most recent. He's still 25 years later, 26 years later, is the most recent defenseman to win the National Player of the Year award. So I'm not saying that George Bond is as good as David Morrow quite yet, but he plays the same kind of way where he's he takes it very personally, his matchup, and he's, you know, that's, you watch him play, and it's like he has all the athleticism that you know, that David Morrow had, but it's that chip on his shoulder that he seems to play with.
It's a real, I mean, we picked up on it in the recruiting process, you know, and he's such a wonderful kid off the field, and then, you know, the switch flips, and, you know, what's incredible is being able to watch the Sowers-Bond matchup throughout practices. I mean, they are, as those are two fierce competitors that take each play extremely personal. So those two will continue to raise the level of the bar here at Princeton.
So some things as you head into the offseason, we mentioned, you've mentioned the seniors several times, and it's never easy for a senior class to you know, stop playing lacrosse and move on, and Austin Sims moving to Major League Lacrosse, and the other guys all moving on with their careers. Some guys in that class were four-year starters, three-year starters, and did some great things. But as you look to the future of the program, I think what really strikes you is how many freshmen and sophomores are contributing already with 2 or 3 years of eligibility left, and it's not just Michael Sowers, but let's start with him. So Teat and Gutterding from Duke are tied for second in Division I in points per game. Michael's first. He'll lead Division I in points per game and assists per game unless either Teat or Gutterding gets 13 points in their first NCAA tournament game. They would tie them. Now, look, both of them are capable of that, but let's go on the assumption they're not going to do that. You know, Michael Sowers, 2 years into his career, you and I have talked about him for hours, but what do you say about him at this stage of his career? And, you know, just there's so many things about him that you can say. He already has more career assists than Tom Schreiber. He's already in the top 5 in assists, top 10 in points. You know, he's led the country in assists and goals per game. This year has actually his career points per game is the best in Division I college lacrosse since 1981 and is the 5th best all time. I mean, he's been extraordinary, and you know, that's just his first 2 years. And I think as you move on with him the next 2 years, I think what you're, you know, the point is, I think he's driven by taking the team with him. as much as anything else. I mean, I think he's really committed to winning and being on a winning team and getting deep into May.
Yeah, I mean, look, what everyone gets a chance to see is what Michael does on game day. And it truly is remarkable. I mean, he's a heck of a young player.
And let me just say, my question would not have been nearly that long if you weren't answering a text message.
Called out on air. Yeah, you know.
Because I'm thinking that, you know, like I was really railing there for a minute.
One of my, Coach March, my assistant coach, I mean, it's, look, my wife, Coach March, Coach Hirsch, Coach Soriano, in that order.
I mean, my question was, you know.
I did say my wife first, I hope.
You did. My question would have been simply like talk about Michael Sowers after 2 years and what you see from the next.
Well, look, I'm good at multitasking here, but look, all the fans, all the Tiger faithful, the whole country gets to see what Michael does on game day. But what makes him different is what he does in our locker room, what he does in the office, what he does on the practice field. I think it's truly remarkable. I said raise the bar, and raising the bar is an understatement to what that young man's going to do for us here. He's just an incredible leader. He's an incredible, you know, the energy, the grind, the focus, the intensity. It's really remarkable. You know, he's just going to be such an incredible program guy, you know, which incredible program guys don't always put up the numbers and points he does, at least in my career. You know, I've had incredible program guys that never play a minute, but to get the total package, you know, it's really, really impressive. We're really proud to have him in the orange and black. We're excited to coach him for another 2 years.
He's making a serious run at top 10 all-time in NCAA in scoring, and he's going to, you know, let's assume he stays healthy, he's going to catch Kevin Lowe probably by the end of next year for the all-time lead in points at Princeton, if not next year, early in his senior year. But he's not the only piece of the equation that comes back. And if you look up and down the roster, you'll see freshmen and sophomores. And, you know, we talked about George Bond and talked about Andrew Song. I mean, he's a guy who probably surprised you with how good of a year he had. And Song and Bond were 1-2 on the team and caused turnovers.
So this is a hockey kid, you know, hockey lacrosse guy from Roxbury Latin up in the ISL. Talented young guy. You know, we had him recruited as a guy that, you know, really savvy, smart, instinctual, picks up a heck of a lot of ground balls. And he came in and did just that. I mean, he has great instincts on the defensive end. We ran him as an LSM. Everyone got to see his craft on the wings and being able to pick up those first-time GBs, which are possessions and possession enders. So, you know, we'll hopefully get to cheer him on. He's going to make a run at the World Championships with the Chinese China. National team, which is very, very cool. We're really proud of that young guy.
And then, you know, you mentioned, we haven't mentioned yet, but Chris Brown, he is the only player on the team who had at least one goal in every game this year, had an outstanding freshman season, put up just short of 40 points. He's just a freshman. You even forget that some guys that you think have been around for a long time, Armin Midgalchi, Chase Williams, guys like that, they're just sophomores.
Yeah, you know, as our systems have kind of changed here, you know, and I appreciate you pointing out the fact that we're playing young guys.
There's more of them, Philip Robertson.
No, there really are. I mean, Chris Brown, you know, coming out of Fairfield.
Connor McCarthy. I don't want to forget anybody here.
No, I know. And these guys, you know, these guys would be proud that, you know, that we're talking about them. But Chris Brown did an exceptional job. You know, he, you know, as we joke off air, we talk often about how Chris Brown produces a lot of his points, you know, on his dodges and his creativity. And it's true, you know, he did a great job in the lefty wing. You know, we were low on left-handed players this year, you know, with really only having Riley and Chris Brown. And Riley was just so effective. And you want to talk about selflessness. Riley was a 60-minute player his sophomore year. And the past 2 years, he's taken a role as a first-line midfielder where you're not a 60-minute guy. You don't run transition. You don't ride. And those are parts of the game that he's outstanding at. And he didn't bat an eye. And that's the true leadership. And Riley's actually getting into coaching. He's heading out to the Culver Military Institute. And he's going to do wonderful things.
Got 100 points?
Yeah. I mean, look, 100 points here in this league, in this schedule, is just outstanding. But back to Chris Brown. I mean, really, really impressed with the young guy. Came in, you know, when Graham Nemi had taken over at Fairfield Prep, I think he pushed Chris to play a more physical game. And he really did. He used his size well. He's got, this is a big-time hockey kid. Good base, good off the ground, picks up tough ground balls, doesn't shy away from contact. So hopefully a lot to look forward to for Chris Brown and his career.
And, you know, we talked about some of the other guys, but when you think about Chase Williams, say, he's a sophomore, he's short 60 midi, who sort of wandered over from the football team, he just seems like he's played for so long here, and you forget he's a sophomore. Or Armin Medgalchi, and he didn't start the first two games his freshman year, and he started every game since, and he's such a veteran, but still has two more years of eligibility left. And these are foundational pieces that you build championships around, guys like, you know, the guys we've mentioned. You know, I said Connor McCarthy as well. You know, I'm sure I'm forgetting people who are in the freshman and sophomore class who play a lot. But the other thing that this does is it creates intense competition for guys to get on the field. You're going to bring in another class next year. You know, you're in a pretty good spot here in terms of a program with some depth and a program where nobody really can take for granted their position.
I mean, look, that was the goal. You know, the immediate shift, you know, is just trying to get it, trying to create the most competitive atmosphere. I think that, you know, on a team of, you know, anywhere from 40 to 46 guys, you really need to drive the level in practice. You know, and our approach as coaches is practice should be a heck of a lot harder than game day. And that comes with extreme talent and extreme depth. So that's something that, you know, we're working our tails off on the recruiting trail to get. You know, we're pushing our guys and we're going to work on developing our guys. But that is, I mean, the true championship teams, you know, and we hope to be there someday and someday soon. You know, those are the teams that truly week in and week out can push themselves to continue to get better and up the performance and up the growth every day. And that's how you reach the championship level.
I think one of the things I took away from watching the team this year is the idea that you never know when the season defining moment is going to be, you know, is going to come up and you have to be ready for it. And if it was, you know, execution against Penn, you know, if you want to take out the game against Yale and just say that in 2018, Yale was a better team, you know, but the execution against a team like Penn or, you know, the end game situations against Brown, I mean, those really came back to haunt you guys, but I think that the lesson was learned.
It is, and I think that when you have that many young folks in your locker room and playing big, important roles, you know, you really never know when you're going to catch your championship run. You don't, it may be your freshman year. It may be your sophomore year. It may not be your senior year. And you have to make sure the mentality is set in stone that it shouldn't matter. It's day in and day out. It doesn't matter. Every game is an enormously big opportunity to represent Princeton and your program and your teammates and the brotherhood that's here. And I think that's something we continue to push and we continue to build here.
And the other thing is that there was like a, you know, I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, but the game against Virginia was tied at halftime and there was like a little letdown that came in end third, beginning of the fourth quarter, that one gets away. It becomes an 18-15 final and maybe a couple of plays here and there. And now all of a sudden you've added a Virginia win to your resume. And just things happen as you go through the course of a season that you have to play each situation knowing that this next possession could really be a big one.
Well, that's just it. And that was my point earlier, you know, in the Virginia game in that third quarter, you know, we screwed up a substitution off the faceoff X, you know, and then we missed a first time ground ball and we took a knucklehead penalty and it put us in a position where, you know, a team like that can go on runs. And, you know, after that game, you know, it wasn't yelling and screaming in the locker room. It was more or less, you know, we got to help a young team realize that you cannot miss opportunity. You cannot waste opportunities. And, you know, and I don't think in the moment, you know, when they missed the assignment on the faceoff X or whatever it may be, that, you know, they were thinking, oh, I just wasted this opportunity. I just think that, you know, it's just helping a young team grow up.
I just think people have a tendency in sports to say, okay, 8-5. You were 8-5. Or they look at a game and say it was, you know, pick a score. It was 12-10. Well, whatever happened at the end must have been what influenced that. But a lot of times they're subtle as you go along. And, you know, the turning points, it's easy to look back on them. But as they're happening, you don't always know what they are. Drifting a little long here, longer than I thought we were going. But one thing I do want to talk to you about is the NCAA tournament starts this weekend. Put you on the spot. Do you see a team that you think has the potential? And to me, I look at this bracket and I'm like, most years you can narrow it down. This year, I don't think you can. I mean,
it's a wild bracket. I mean, Denver losing in their conference tournament threw a little wrench in things. You know, I spoke to Coach Bernhard over at Maryland this morning, and we were just kind of talking about their potential matchup between Canisius and Robert Morris and how Robert Morris could be a dangerous team. But, you know, I gave Coach Bernhard some credit in the fact that as I watch all these teams, you know, and there are some really hot teams that Maryland still does a very good job of not beating themselves in games. You know, even though they made a couple mistakes in that Big Ten championship, you know, and I know they'd admit it too, but when it comes down to it, they're a very complete team. I think John Hopkins is playing great lacrosse right now.
I could see them winning the whole thing.
Brock Turnbull is making some saves for him, and Cole Williams playing great, and they've got all their pieces in the right spots. You know, they've got very complementary pieces.
There's like four or five teams that I could see winning the entire thing or losing their first game, and Yale is one of them. I could see Yale running through this whole tournament because they're another team that's not going to beat themselves. They have a lot of seniors. They have a face-off guy. They have a star. Now they're playing UMass in the first round, and UMass has a very good face-off guy and a very good goalie. And, you know, would it shock you if UMass beat Yale, or would it shock you if Yale won the whole thing?
No, it's a really tough matchup because Yale got the better of them early this year. And, you know, Yale does fall into that category, you know, in 2018 of team that doesn't beat themselves. Their senior class is really, really impressive. I mean, those are big, strong athletes that play with an edge, and they're playing with a purpose right now. So, you know, it'd be nice to see an Ivy team make a run at it, and Yale's equipped to do so. But really, I mean, some incredible matchups. I mean, Albany from the beginning of the year and now kind of dealing and manufacturing through the Connor Fields injury, that, you know, that could be tough sledding for them. I think that some of the matchups, I mean, you know, Virginia Loyola, I mean, Loyola, you know, they've got the experience. They could do it. I think that, you know, there's a heck of a lot of good programs out there playing. Some really tough first-round matchups, though.
I keep drifting back to Hopkins. I don't know. They're just playing so well right now. But, you know, they're not that far removed from losing to Maryland in a regular season game. And then the other thing about Hopkins is I think that they've shown that they can win low-scoring games and high-scoring games. But I also think Maryland's really good. I'm willing to root for Coach Bernhardt.
Yeah, I mean, we got Coach Bernhardt did a wonderful job when he was here. And he's a very, very close friend. We love him. You know, and we're pulling for him.
So the 2018 Princeton men's lacrosse season finishes with a record of 8-5. Tigers tie for third in the Ivy League. I think everybody wants to take some steps forward next year. And as we talked about, the pieces are in place. Again, nine seniors graduating, guys who gave a lot to the program and guys who did some great things here, guys who I'm assuming are going to stay close to the program as they move forward, and join the alumni group of Princeton lacrosse, which is so special. And, I think this podcast has been a really good way for us each week to talk to that group. And I know that a lot of people listen and they really appreciate it. And when we say things they don't like, they're quick to point them out, which is a sign that they're definitely listening.
Which is awesome.
It's exactly what we want them to do. But in general, I think it's been a good year for us on this podcast, and I look forward to doing it again next year. We'll have a few like we did last year in the off season. But I know a lot of people are already excited about the 2019 season for the men's lacrosse team.
Well, again, you know, I'll take this moment real quick just to thank our senior class and their parents. Wonderful, wonderful people, very complimentary group. Just incredible. And joining the alumni group, and if I can, you know, thank you to the Tiger Faithful and the alums. You guys are remarkable. The feedback throughout the year, the support you show us week in and week out on game day, but then, you know, through the mentorship stuff.
I don't want to single people out because so many people do so much, but Ed Calkins really.
Oh, we have to single him out. I mean, how the man can balance everything. He's an absolute wizard. He's a driving force in this program. He's really outstanding. I mean, Ed Calkins, thank you so much, you know, from the bottom of our hearts, from each and every single person in this program, in this locker room. But to the Tiger Faithful, thank you very much. We'll continue to work hard and we'll produce the outputs, you know, the outcomes that we all deserve.
So for Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Madeline, I want to thank everybody for being with us, not just today, but all season here on the Princeton Laxcast. Like I said, we'll stop by a few times in the fall and maybe one time in the summer and see what's going on. And we'll be back next year for season 3. And Coach, thanks again.
Thank you very much.
And once again, thank everybody for listening and thank you for your continued support of Princeton men's lacrosse.